Good morning. That bio was mostly about my work more recently on health reform. What I'm going to talk to you this morning is about some work that I've been doing since 1997 as founder of the Merger Watch Project. There are some handouts on the back table that describe in more detail some of the things I'm going to discuss, so you might want to pick them up afterwards. So, I want to alert you all that the problem of hospital mergers is on the rise again. I created the Merger Watch Project in the mid to late 1990s when we were first seeing a huge wave of these hospital mergers. And they declined a little bit in the early part of the 2000s and are back with a vengeance. It's because of the struggling economy, tight credit, you know, the same kind of things that make families struggle in this economy. And even though you would think that hospitals would be happy about health reforms because they should end up having more paying customers, they're very nervous about it. In some cases, they're worried about cuts to what are called DSH funds, disproportionate share funds. And so if they don't get that money, you know, can they be sure they'll get paying customers? The bottom line is they're nervous. And so in 2010, we're on track to exceed the total number of hospital deals in any year in almost a decade. So this is a wake-up call to you guys to be looking out for this in your states. The particular focus of my project is on a subset of those hospital mergers. It's those between religiously sponsored hospitals, particularly Catholic ones, and so I was very interested in the previous presentation, and hospitals that are secular or not religiously affiliated in any way. When you try to put together a Catholic hospital and a non-Catholic hospital, it's really a challenge. They have differing missions, ethics, and service delivery patterns. And when one of the hospitals is religiously affiliated, its leadership very often at the bargaining table for putting the merger, you know, deal together, will say a condition of the deal is that you have to adopt our religious healthcare doctrine. We have a lot of cases going on right now. Here's a few of them. Sierra Vista, Arizona is probably the one that's the most egregious at the moment. It's a little hospital way down on the border of Arizona and Mexico. It's the only hospital in town. You'd have to drive more than an hour to get to Tucson to get an alternative. It is not a religious hospital, but it has started a two-year trial partnership with the Catholic Carondelet Health System and has had some serious effects on availability of reproductive health care. And so these are some of the other ones. I won't go into each one of them, but to give you a sense of the geographic range of these mergers. Now, religious hospitals, I should say, were founded for good reasons. Way back when, there was a lot of discrimination against Catholic doctors, Irish and Italian doctors. They needed places to have admitting privileges. Also, there was concern on the part of the patients that they could have last rites, that they could have communion. And so, you know, there was a reason for them when they were founded. But today, they're serving patients of all faiths. They employ physicians and staff of all religious backgrounds and no religious faith. They rely heavily on public funding. We did a study a few years back that showed that religious hospitals were billing Medicare more than $45 billion a year, Medicare and Medicaid. So, you know, they're not running on the donations that my mom used to make in the church collection on Sunday. They're using public money. And increasingly, they're entering into partnerships with these secular hospitals because of the industry-wide drive for savings and market share. Just to give you a sense of the dominance of Catholic and some other religious hospitals, this is a chart of the largest nonprofit health systems in the U.S. in 2009. The ones in yellow are religiously affiliated. So you can see that some of the Catholic systems, they're huge, and the Adventist health system is large as well. But what happens when you pull together this many Catholic hospitals into a system, they get an enormous amount of market power. They, you know, are able to gobble up other hospitals, and it becomes quite a difficult situation. Why these mergers pose the biggest ethical conflicts? The ethical and religious directives for Catholic healthcare services are issued by the bishops and updated regularly. It's a set of about 72, actually I think it's 73 now, rules for how Catholic hospitals are supposed to operate. They're enforced by the bishops in the Vatican and applied to all Catholic health facilities in the United States. And the problem is that when they merge with non-Catholic hospitals, they get imposed on those hospitals. What can happen in these mergers? We've had many cases in which contraception has been eliminated at the hospital. Emergency contraception for rape victims can be either eliminated or compromised. Tubal ligations and vasectomies are almost always prohibited. Abortions are called a never category. We'll never have those. Prompt appropriate treatment of emergencies like ectopic pregnancies and miscarriage can also be really compromised at these hospitals. Safer sex counseling for STI prevention, no mention of condoms allowed. It's very serious. Also, and this is surprising to many people, infertility treatments such as artificial insemination or in vitro fertilization are also prohibited because Catholic doctrine believes those are contrary to the natural reproductive act. And there also are some problems with honoring patients' end-of-life wishes. This brief history of Merger Watch, created in 1997 after there was a merger close to our office. I was then working up in Albany. There was a merger, it eliminated all the contraceptive services and an outpatient clinic used by low-income women. And, you know, it was too late by the time we found this out. So we created the project to figure out what to do about it and intervene earlier. Among the things we do are community mobilization. This is a group of folks from the Austin and Oak Park neighborhoods of Chicago, west side of Chicago and Oak Park, who were mobilizing about a merger there. We also use regulatory interventions, whether states with certificate of need review processes. We coach consumers on how to intervene. We also have approached attorneys general to intervene, and sometimes the Federal Trade Commission, which really doesn't give a hoot about reproductive health, but does care about whether the prices for hospital care might go up. And if you have a merger, why don't you often have a monopoly, prices go up. Okay, the meat of what I wanted to tell you here today, and that was all to give you sort of a sense of what's happening. Since 1997, we've worked now at Merger Watch on more than 90 cases of these mergers all over the country. And I want to share with you a few emerging what we call creative solutions. What do you do when the hospital says we're going to adopt the Catholic rules and eliminate all these services? So we've come up with these two types of solutions to maintain community access to reproductive health care. The first is hospitals within hospitals, where you carve out part of the existing hospital building, you separately incorporate it with its own board and staff, and they can continue to provide most reproductive health services. And the second is hospitals beside hospitals. And there are pros and cons for these two approaches. There is a briefing paper about this on the table in the back. So here's an early model. This was the Brackenridge Hospital in Austin, Texas. This is a city-owned safety net hospital. They selected Seton Healthcare to run the hospital. A compromise at first allowed city-paid workers to provide the reproductive health services, but then the bishops cracked down on them. And Seton was forced to tell the city of Austin that they could no longer live with this thing of having city-paid workers within the hospital doing these services. So here's what we came up with. There's a new Austin Women's Hospital that was created on the fifth floor of Brackenridge Hospital. And that's where women can go to get tubal ligations, emergency contraception, and contraception. It has a separate staff, separate funding, and it even has a separate entrance. This is kind of an example of the ludicrous ends that we often have to go to protect reproductive health services. As you'll see, I don't know if I can use my little pointer, yeah. You cannot get into this Austin Women's Hospital by going in the front door of Brackenridge because they didn't want the receptionists who were employed by Seton to be referring women up to the fifth floor for these immoral services. So the city had to spend $9 million to build a new elevator up the outside of the hospital. So you can only get there from the parking garage, going up in an elevator and into the Austin Women's Hospital. The negative outcomes are, why do we have to spend $9 million to accommodate Catholic health rules in a hospital, public hospital in the United States? They also could not figure out how to provide abortion in that. That was not allowed, even though it was separately incorporated. And in my opinion, they should have just fired Seton Health as manager of the hospital, but they didn't. And as it turned out, the manager of Seton, the city manager then went to work for Seton and got a very nice job. The positive outcomes are, though, as you can see, it's a pretty nice looking facility. They moved births into this facility, so they have 1,500 births a year. And, you know, for the low-income women using this hospital, it actually produced a pretty nice new birthing center. Here's a more recent example. We've been just wrapping up in Kingston, New York, a case we've been working on since 1998. We defeated this proposed merger twice, and then a hospital rightsizing commission came along and ordered secular Kingston Hospital and Catholic Benedictine Hospital to merge. They're about the same size. They're 1 mile away from each other in a small city. And previous attempts to merge, as I said, were defeated. So when the rightsizing commission came around and said, you guys have to merge or we're going to yank the operating license of one of your hospitals, the group we've been working with for 10 years there came together again and said, okay, what do we want? We want to make sure that there still are abortion services in the community. Kingston Hospital had provided 190 abortions a year, many of them for low-income women, some later term. Wanted to protect the ability of women delivering babies to have postpartum tubal ligations in the hospital. Wanted to ensure they would properly treat ectopic pregnancies and miscarriages, no gag rules on physicians and nurses, and ensure that if they're going to consolidate services between the two hospitals, we wanted to make sure that maternity care and emergency care ended up at Kingston Hospital, not Benedictine. So, here's another expensive creative solution that we came up with. We built, used a $4 million state grant to enable the creation of the Fox Hall Ambulatory Surgery Center. It's an outpatient center that is located right in the parking lot of Kingston Hospital. It's actually attached to Kingston Hospital, but it has a separate staff and separate funding and is doing abortions and sterilizations. So you can see with the outpatient version, rather than the hospital within a hospital, you can keep abortions because it's not part of the hospital. The downside is, what do you do about postpartum tubal ligations? So we managed to get those continued in Kingston Hospital by having to go to the Archdiocese of New York and get a special dispensation. It's important to note that this surgery center has a mixed menu of services, so you can also get some other types of outpatient surgery. I think vision care is one of them. We did this on purpose to make sure that women going into the center wouldn't be readily identified as going in for abortions, so that nobody can tell why they're going in there. And this is important because the headquarters of the county Right to Life is across the street from Kingston Hospital with these huge aborted fetus signs. And they've picketed a lot and caused trouble. We wanted to make sure that the thing would be financially viable, so we got a condition attached to the approval of this surgery center that requires a report back in 5 years to make sure that they're going to make it financially. And if not, then the health department can substitute another operator of the center. And here's my last case example, Troy, New York. So when we started the Merger Watch project, it was because of a case in Troy, New York. There were three hospitals, one Catholic and two non-Catholic. Two of them merged and wiped out contraceptive services at the non-Catholic hospital. Lo and behold, the same right-sizing commission recommended that the remaining two hospitals in Troy merge, secular Good Samaritan and Catholic St. Mary's. So we were faced with a threat to the services at Samaritan, tubal ligations and vasectomies, postpartum tubal ligations, contraceptive counseling, and abortions, although it's a pretty minor player in terms of the abortion provision in that area. So here's what we came up with there, and this is being built as we speak. It's called the Burdett Care Center. It's a separately incorporated women's health center on the second floor of Samaritan Hospital. It's being constructed now and will be up and running before the hospitals get approval to merge. So it'll be there and in place and cannot be removed or touched in any way by the merged entity. Some of the good parts about it, all maternity care from both hospitals are going to be incorporated at this Burdett Care Center. And due to some great advocacy on the part of some terrific midwives at St. Mary's, they're going to bring the midwife-centered model of care, which had been in St. Mary's, over to this new place. So in my view, we're going to have the best of both worlds. We're going to have midwife-run birthing center, and we're also going to allow postpartum tubals and contraceptive counseling. Downsides, no abortions allowed, and we had to pay $4 million to get this grant. So these are some folks who are currently out on the street picketing in front of Sierra Vista Hospital. They're there every day. And here are some of the principles that we think ought to be followed in putting these mergers together, that it's the welfare of the patient that has to be at the center of medical decision-making and treatment, not the religious doctrine of the hospital. We don't think religious moral beliefs of the caregiver or religious doctrine of an institution can be allowed to obstruct a patient's access to care. And patients must be able to make treatment decisions based on accurate medical information, not biased medical information or, you know, where things are left out of the description of what your options are. And they should be able to use their own ethical and religious beliefs, not the ones of the hospital, to make treatment decisions. So this is a billboard that's been up in Sierra Vista, which we helped design and fund, and it's up there where all the hospital officials have to drive by it on the way to the hospital. And so that's it. That's what we're doing with Merger Watch these days. Thank you. It's a complicated picture. I mean, yes, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops has certainly got a lot of clout in the U.S. healthcare system. We saw that with the Stupak Amendment and ending up with that dreadful Nelson Amendment. It's only going to be more so now that we have, you know, John Boehner going to be the House Majority Leader. I am a bit worried about whether we will ever get the Obama administration to lift or modify those conscience regulations. Remember those? You know, we all wrote comments in and said, "Dear HHS, this is ridiculous. Please modify these or get rid of them." And we've never heard another word, have we? So I'm kind of concerned that we won't get that lifted. And, you know, that gives blanket permission for these kind of situations to occur. The more positive side is that over the years, the Catholic hospitals have their businesses. And while they are answerable to the bishops, the local bishops, they need to make these mergers happen. And so we're actually seeing a little more willingness from the business executives of these hospitals to try to work out these kind of creative solutions. I think maybe because we've been pounding away on them for, you know, since 1997, but they're a little more receptive than they used to be.
My question is also for Lois, these expensive solutions that end up happening, how do you liberate that kind of money out of city budgets? They never feel flush, even when it's not the recession. And has so I'm curious about how you do it, and then have there been times when that brought it all down, that there was a solution?
Well, the Brackenridge one in Texas is a while ago now, and I don't know whether the city would be able to afford that kind of solution these days. The ones that we've more recently done in upstate New York, Kingston and Troy, the money for those creative solutions came out of a pot of money that the state put aside to enable the downsizing and right-sizing of the hospital industry. And it could have been used for a variety of different purposes. Sometimes it's closing hospitals, sometimes it's eliminating whole ranges of services at hospitals, but we managed to divert it to this purpose. I would suspect that other states are going to be looking to downsize and consolidate their hospitals in the current financial situation, and I think they're going to face demands from the hospitals to set aside money to help the hospitals do this. And so keep an eye out for that pot of money. Yes?
I'm going back to the conscientious clauses. Have you dealt with any of that as far as people that are coming in to staff the women's part of the hospital and then they say, I don't feel comfortable providing this service or doing this?
Right. Well, you know, unlike the Catholic hospitals, many of which require their staff and their physicians with admitting privileges to sign statements pledging never to violate the Catholic ethical directives, these outpatient or hospital within a hospital circumstance, we don't require them to pledge to do anything. So far, we've not had a problem. But, you know, it could be a problem down the road with some of these sort of stealth anti-choice people trying to get employed by some of these places. We'll see. A good question. Yes?
In these hospitals, the side outcomes for the entrances, and how visible is it to whether you might need services with the health portion of it?
It's a good question. There's not a great big sign outside these hospitals that says abortion's here, but the providers in the community know. And so if a woman goes first, you know, to an OBGYN and she's talking with him or her about, I'm going to have a baby, I'd like to have my tubes tied afterwards, that provider can direct the woman to the correct place to deliver.
So if they're working in the Catholic part of the hospital,
you mean if the patient ends up in the Catholic side? Well, in many cases, the providers work for both the Catholic side and the separately incorporated side because, you know, a lot of these are small towns. They don't have a lot of other hospitals. That's kind of what's going on here. They're consolidating. So they tend to work in both sides. And what they can do, I mean, they can't talk about these prohibited services within the Catholic restricted hospital. But they can talk about it in their offices, assuming the office is not owned by the Catholic hospital system.
So this will be the last question. All other questions, we can save them till the end of the session. If we have time, we will take more questions for either any of the three presentations at that time.
Okay.
What if there's someone else who they have an alternative? You talked a lot about the Catholics. What about
Mm-hmm. There are some other religious faiths that are active in the hospital industry, Baptists, Seventh-day Adventists, and then, of course, there's the more progressive Protestant groups that own hospitals, like Presbyterians, Lutherans, Jewish groups, remember Mount Sinai Hospital. Those groups don't have any restrictions generally on women's reproductive health at the hospitals they own. Baptist hospitals tend to ban abortion, but are permissive about these other services. Seventh-day Adventists, actually, it's kind of interesting. The biggest problem at those hospitals is that they don't allow meat in the hospital cafeteria. They don't allow shrimp, which has been a big problem at these hospitals in the South when they're taken over and gumbo gets banned in the hospital cafeteria. They don't allow caffeine. But they're pretty good on most reproductive health services. In fact, in a case we're working on we've been working on for some time now in Montgomery County, Maryland, we're promoting the construction of an Adventist hospital as opposed to a Catholic one, because the Adventist one will be better for women's reproductive health. So thanks, I'll stop for now.